This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, September 15th, 2008. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, The Essential American Poets. The Poetry Foundation has just announced a big new audio poetry initiative called Essential American Poets. In cooperation with the Poetry Archive in the UK and the Library of Congress, PoetryFoundation.org is making available recordings of more than 100 American poets, living and dead. Some are historical recordings, some we're recording ourselves. We will be releasing recordings by a different poet every few weeks. People can listen to the recordings as a podcast, which includes a short introduction about the poet, along with 3 to 5 of their poems. Or you can download individual poems from our website, where the text will also be available. On this program, we're going to hear two of the poets, Gwendolyn Brooks and Theodore Retke. So, who chose these 100-plus essential American poets? Well, they were selected a few years ago by Donald Hall, when he was Poet Laureate of the United States. He did it in consultation with Andrew Motion, who was then the Poet Laureate of Great Britain. Donald Hall has been an essential American poet himself for half a century. Along with a tall stack of poetry books, he has written everything from essays and short fiction to children's books. He joins me by phone from his home in New Hampshire. Hi, Mr. Hall.
Hi.
So this project was conceived as a way of introducing readers and listeners to poets essential for them to know about. But I wanted to talk to you about the way we're delivering it, the form that we're delivering it in. These are recordings of poems. I know you have a high opinion of audio poetry. Your last book, your selected poems, was released with a CD of you reading the poems. What do you get from listening to a poem as opposed to just reading it on the page?
I think you get a great deal. The sound of poetry is where I enter poetry. When I was 12 years old, when I first fell in love with it, it was the sound. And I also think that it is important to hear it in the poet's own voice. Now, some poets are very good readers. Some are rather poor.
Yeah.
I would always want to hear them at some point or other in their own voices. It is a sort of help, like helping somebody across the street or something, to hear the voice, the quality of the voice, the tone of it, the flesh of it.
Can you think of anybody whose reading really surprised you? Some poet who totally changed your idea of what his poetry or her poetry was about?
I remember being shocked and educated by hearing Ezra Pound say his own poems.
The thought of what America would be like if the classics had a wide circulation troubles my sleep.
The quality of the sound is poor,
yeah.
But the voice is there, the man is there. And the kind of emphasis of his voice was emotional, but also connected me with the poems, which of course I already knew, in a different way, and allowed me to read them, take them in, in an altered way.
Yeah, he almost sang his poetry, and also his accent. It was just unplaceable. I've never heard an American accent, or any accent, actually, quite like Ezra Pound's.
It's as eclectic as his places of residence.
Yeah. Do you think that poetry in the 20th century may have strayed too far into the page and away from the sounds of poetry? And do you think maybe with these new technologies like MP3s and things like that, that it's coming back around to its original state as an oral art?
Oh, I have a complicated answer, which will be too long for you. But
give it a shot.
W.B. Yeats, across the United States in 1935 to make his living, and he never once read his poems aloud. He lectured. That's what people wanted.
Mm.
They didn't want poetry from poets. They wanted ideas or history.
Mm.
Therefore, poets rarely read their work aloud until, say, late in the 1950s. And the poets who had no practice in it did not, by and large, know how to do it. Poets who are younger, even as old as I am, had a great deal of practice reading their poems aloud, and they have become better at it.
Now, what caused that change back in the 1950s that you mentioned?
I wondered and wondered. One day I was staying at home in the place where I was living in, and the telephone rang, and it was a lecture agent asking if he could sell me as a reader. I couldn't believe my ears.
Huh.
At first, I thought it was a fad, it would go away.
Right.
But, of course, it has only increased and increased.
So we're going to listen to two poems together by two poets that you put on your list of essential American poets,
yes.
Gwendolyn Brooks and Theodore Retke. And we're going to start with Retke and one of his most famous poems called My Papa's Waltz. I'm sure you know that poem.
Yes, I know it very well.
Before we hear it, did you happen to know Theodore Retke?
Yes, I did. I did. I met him only a few times. We corresponded. But I heard him read, and I read at the University of Washington when he was teaching there,
mm-hmm.
and he came to listen to me. And afterwards, there was a party where he and I sat together, and we're both sort of outrageous. I found out later that he was beginning one of his manic phases at that time, and I wasn't surprised when I heard it. He was wonderful, kind of outrageous and wonderful. He also went through terrible depressions.
Yeah.
But I never saw him in a depression.
Can you set up My Papa's Waltz a little bit? What's the poem about?
Well, the poem is about him as a little boy and his father, who is apparently a drunk at the moment, twirls him around and waltzes him. And the boy is sort of passive and joyous at the same time. Well, maybe we should hear it.
Yeah, let's listen to it.
My Papa's Waltz. The whiskey on your breath could make a small boy dizzy. But I hung on like death. Such waltzing was not easy. We romped until the pans slid from the kitchen shelf. My mother's countenance could not unfrown itself. The hand that held my wrist was battered on one knuckle. At every step you missed, my right ear scraped a buckle. You beat time on my head with a palm caked hard by dirt, then waltzed me off to bed, still clinging to your shirt.
That was Theodore Retke reading My Papa's Waltz from a reading at the YMHA Poetry Center in New York City in the 1950s. The tapes were supplied to the Library of Congress by Oscar Williams.
Wonderful to hear his voice after all these years.
Any surprises in the reading for you?
Well, it surprised me that he read it as slowly as he did. It didn't displease me, but, it seems more accelerated on the page than it did in his voice. But he read it beautifully, and he made the right pauses.
The whiskey on your breath could make a small boy dizzy. But I hung on like death. Such waltzing was not easy.
And the first stanza has one of the most cliched rhymes in the world, breath and death.
Yeah.
But the poem totally survives it.
But then he does a wonderful off rhyme, dizzy with easy. And
isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, yeah, and it suggests the uneasiness of the boy.
Yeah, yeah. On my death, such waltzing was not easy. It's almost parenthetical there.
We romped until the pans slid from the kitchen shelf. My mother's countenance could not unfrown itself.
Could not unfrown itself. Isn't that wonderful? I mean, it is a wonderful kind of neologism, unfrown.
The hand that held my wrist was battered on one knuckle. At every step you missed, my right ear scraped a buckle.
What about the sort of humor in it? I heard you laugh at one point when the rhyme of knuckle and buckle. What are you laughing at there?
I think I was chuckling particularly at the precision of it, the unexpectedness of the two-syllable rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
And there are little metrical tricks in this poem,
yeah,
which I've always loved.
Well, give me an example of one of the metrical
sure.
tricks. Yeah.
The poem is basically da-dum-da-dum-da-dum.
Yep.
But there's one point when he inverts the order of da-dum in the middle of a line.
You beat time on my head.
You beat time on my head instead of you beat time on my head, as
right.
it were. It's a beautiful little moment, which I've always loved.
You beat time on my head with a palm caked hard by dirt, then waltzed me off to bed, still clinging to your shirt.
There's a family dynamic here that is not particularly happy.
It gets it all, doesn't it, right there.
Right. Now, another poet on your list of essential American poets is the great Gwendolyn Brooks.
Yes. I remember buying her first book. And I read it in the 40s, I think in the early 40s, she was born early enough so that she came to the public reading aloud rather late.
Right.
But she always wrote for her own voice, I'm sure.
I want to play one poem for you that's called The Mother. It's a poem in the voice of a woman who has had several abortions and is thinking about those children that never were. Here's Gwendolyn Brooks reading The Mother.
Abortions will not let you forget. You remember the children you got that you did not get. The damp, small pulps with a little or with no hair. The singers and workers that never handled the air. You will never neglect or beat them, or silence or buy with a sweet. You will never wind up the sucking thumb, or scuttle off ghosts that come. You will never leave them, controlling your luscious sigh. Return for a snack of them with gobbling mother eye. I have heard in the voices of the wind the voices of my dim-killed children. I have contracted, I have eased my dim dears at the breast they could never suck. I have said, sweets, if I sinned, if I seized your luck and your lives from your unfinished reach, if I stole your births and your names, your straight baby tears and your games, your stilted or lovely loves, your tumults, your marriages, aches, and your deaths. If I poison the beginnings of your breaths, believe that even in my deliberateness, I was not deliberate. Though why should I whine that the crime was other than mine, since anyhow you are dead, or rather, or instead, you were never made. But that too, I am afraid, is faulty. Oh, what shall I say? How is the truth to be said? You were born, you had body, you died. It is just that you never giggled or planned or cried. Believe me, I loved you all. Believe me, I knew you, though faintly, and I loved you all.
That was Gwendolyn Brooks reading The Mother. It was recorded in January of 1961 at the Recording Lab in the Library of Congress. It's not one of her best-known poems, but I was trying to choose something today from the poems we have available, and this one really struck me, partly because I have two young kids.
Right. It must have been shocking at the time it came out. I like the way she read it very much. She has, for instance, a lot of line breaks that say, emphasize a word, and then continue in the next line on one word. But she just used that when she said it aloud. I mean, she obviously intended it.
You will never neglect or beat them.
Yeah. Them is on a separate line. And the pause between the two was minuscule. But it was there.
Yeah.
It's hard to do.
Yeah.
It's hard to represent with your voice.
There's an argument with herself. I kind of wish she had slowed down for this argument.
Though why should I whine that the crime was other than mine, since anyhow you are dead. Or rather, or instead, you were never made. But that too, I am afraid, is faulty. Oh, what shall I say? How is the truth to be said? You were born, you had body, you died. It is just that you never giggled or planned or cried.
And she kind of plows right through that.
I think that quality of the poem follows the track of the mind. And that happens rather quickly.
Yeah, it does.
I think I'm not disturbed by that quickness.
If I sinned, if I seized your luck and your lives from your unfinished reach, if I stole your births and your names, your straight baby tears and your games, your stilted or lovely loves, your tumults, your marriages, aches, and your deaths, if I poisoned the beginnings of your breaths, believe that even in my deliberateness, I was not deliberate.
How are we supposed to think of the speaker in this poem who basically is saying that she killed her own children?
She's saying she killed her own children, yes, and some strange, some paradoxical fondness for the children whom she has prevented. And I admire it for its tone and its attitude, which is ambivalent and very hard to anticipate. Poetry is almost exists almost in order to express ambivalence. In My Papa's Waltz, it's the fear of what is happening and the love at the same time. I mean, by ambivalence, I simply mean the co-presence of apparently impossible to associate emotions. There is no love without haste or hate or distaste or whatever. Mm. There's never a pure emotion. I'm not sure there is a pure emotion possible to a human being. And more than any other art, poetry embodies this many-ness of the cycle, this conflict of feelings. And Gwendolyn Brooks' poem is a fine example of it.
Donald Hall is a former poet laureate in the United States. His selected poems is called White Apples and the Taste of Stone, published in paperback by Mariner Books. You can read some of his poems on our website, poetryfoundation.org, where you can also find out more about Essential American Poets. The first Essential American Poets podcast will be a handful of poems by Gwendolyn Brooks. Look for it at poetryfoundation.org. We always want to hear what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.